I used to be able to name every nut that there was. And that used to drive my mother crazy because she used to say, Harlan Pepper, if you don't stop naming nuts. And the joke was, of course, that we lived in pine nut. And I think that's what put it in my head at that point. So I'd go to sleep. She'd hear me in the other room and she would just start yelling. I'd say, peanut, hazelnut, cashew nut, macadamia nut. That was the one that would send her into a, going crazy.
TBTL!
You know, I would like to take this straw and stick it in your ear and extract everything you've ever thought or felt or seen or even dreamed about your profession.
I gotta be honest with you, sir. The kind of work I do, I don't think it's as interesting as you think it is.
My podcast is on life support. Hey, I need new listeners.
That was a joke. Humor is the tool of the interesting.
I was skeptical. It seemed too good to be true. I'm so glad I tried it.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to a Wednesday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host, coming to you once again from Las Vegas, Nevada, where it is rainy and cloudy and wet, and not at all the way that I think it should ever be in Las Vegas. I don't know what the, you know, aquifer implications would be. Let's be honest. I think that ship sailed a long time ago in this town. Hope everybody enjoyed the Colorado River while it lasted, because I believe it's been siphoned off mostly to this hotel room at the Waldorf Astoria, where I figured out there's a TV built into the mirror in the bathroom. So tonight, Calgon is going to take me away. I've never really had the strong urge to watch television in the bathtub or in the bathroom, but the fact that it's an option, I'm not going to miss that chance to blow. So anyway, it's a rainy day in Vegas is what I'm trying to tell you here as we start episode 2851 in a collector series. Of course, I don't have all of my magical equipment down here, so normally you'd already have heard 1 to 4 hilarious sound effects that would have just made your morning. But because I'm missing a key component of the operation, which is a cord, a cable, we call a mini-to-mini, which probably retails for about $1.50 at Radio Shack, RIP. Are all of the Radio Shacks gone? We've only talked about Radio Shack 1 kabillion times on the show, but I don't remember. I know there's one Blockbuster left in America. But are there any Radio Shacks? Huh. I know who will know that. It's my friend and the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. Here he is, having the time of his life, even though he suffers from low-grade garbage anxiety. He is the one, the only Cobro, Andrew Walsh. And he joins us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Mimi's! There's one of the drops that you didn't have because you're mini to mini. That was my imitation.
That was good.
Of Stephen K. Smith.
Are there any Radio Shacks?
I think that somebody maybe like Sprint or maybe Sprint's Arbogast, the local traffic reporter. Somebody, I think, bought
personal
the...
friend.
That's right. Used to work. It's Sprint's, right? Sprint's Arbogast?
It's Sprint's. Well, it's Cynthia.
Okay.
But her dad used to call her Sprints, and so now, which I think is one of the coolest nicknames or names, I guess.
It's pretty good.
Sprints.
Yeah, definitely pops on the radio. So anyway, I think Sprint's Arbogast, or maybe Sprint, the cellular carrier, bought the rights to the Radio Shack name, and there are still like little Radio Shack, I think, kiosks inside some cell phone stores. I mean, honestly, if you respected the brand, you would have just killed it. I mean, it's just, I mean, isn't that the saddest thing you've ever heard? That Radio Shack is now potentially just like kiosks inside of cell stores that are possibly inside of vape stores, inside of a hookah lounge. Like, it's just so sad.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
That was one part Boris Karloff, one part Kyra Stahl, 0 parts Bob Edwards.
Bob Edwards, thanks you for that.
I am trying to find if there is... God, Andrew, my friend, when you're right, you're right. I'm going to make a joke at your expense, and I hope it doesn't throw us off for the rest of the show. It doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes you are just... You couldn't have been more right. I did a search for Radio Shack near me here in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. and I've got the Sprint store in the Rainbow Springs Shopping Center, the Sprint store on Las Vegas Boulevard, and the Sprint store in the Warm Springs Marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
That's sad.
The idea, though, of, as you had presented, this sort of turducken of sadness,
yeah.
this idea of just going into... Like, going through the various strata of, like, the kind of retail places that no one's ever that excited to be at. And I
right.
think peace and love to our listeners who may operate a vape store.
Right.
Or
a Zumba studio. God love you.
Right. Just, it's the kind of thing that's in a strip mall that is it's necessary for the world. We need to have them. But nobody's ever just like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to, you know... What would be an example of this? I feel like anything I say is going to be hurtful, so I'm trying to, because we've got lots of small business owners that are listeners, so I don't want to like, I want to say pho, because pho often inhabits or sort of hermit crabs weird former retail spaces, but the fact is I am very excited when I'm at a place to have pho.
Yes.
So that's a bad example.
But I'm very judgy about pho places, and I know that this is on the record, but let it be restated. I'm very skeptical and biased against, I'll just say it, pho places that use some sort of a pun on the word pho.
Really?
And those are the kind you usually find in, like, a strip mall of some sort. Like pho, get about
pho
it.
Place, stop remembering that, pho?
That, I told you, can we unpack that? Because I honestly think
yes.
you are often proud... or at least you work hard at the things you post on Twitter, and you'll often tell me about them.
You.
And I just miss them. Like, you're telling me about them later. I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds funny. Yesterday, I happened to catch a tweet that you sent in the moment, and I think it's the funniest thing you've ever written. And
oh, wow.
It only has like 17 likes, and I don't get it.
It asks a lot of the possible retweeter or liker.
I did have to think about it, but maybe that's why I like it. I'm, as everybody knows, I'm a bit more of an intellectual.
Well, I was, and we'll get into this in much deeper detail coming up, but I'm here in Las Vegas because of this Pizza Expo, which is crawling with tens of listeners, it turns out.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah, which is actually really fun. I mean, I guess Las Vegas is not that far from the Northwest, so I'm always amazed when I'm down here and I see like someone in a Seahawks hat. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's as if I'm in like, you know, I don't know, the like deep Chile in the like in Patagonia or something, and I see somebody with a Russell Wilson jersey. It's mm-hmm. like, no, this is a 2-hour flight from Seattle. It's a major destination. But anyway, there are a lot of people from the Northwest and lots of TBTL listeners down here, and I've been running into some of them, which has been awesome. But I'm here doing a TV story about this Pizza Expo, and I have been doing a lot of... I've been struck by a lot of the T-shirt choices and a lot of the just, you know, the phrasing and the kind of... Just the way that people express their love for pizza, or the way that pizza restaurants are looking to make an impression, I guess. And I noticed that somebody was wearing a T-shirt yesterday that said, New York pizza, New York attitude. And then the pizza shop is located in Benson, Nebraska, as the T-shirt indicated.
And as a listener pointed out on Twitter that I thought was hilarious after our conversation yesterday about you being a kid and trying to find New England on the map, Benson, mm-hmm. New England.
Yes, I know. That would have taken it down to 4 likes
yeah.
because it would have made it an even more layered dumb joke. But so then I was just like ruminating on that, like the idea of what does a New York attitude look like in Benson, Nebraska? And so I sort of tried to come up with like a one click off New Yorkish phrase. But one thing is you have to look really closely at the photo to notice that it says Benson, Nebraska. So that's like that would be. That would be the first thing that I'm asking the viewer of this tweet to do. And most people don't because we're all busy. So it's kind of a weird it's a weird joke if you don't realize that the place is located in Nebraska. Then what I wrote was something like I tried to write a version of "You talking to me?" I think I said, "Are you saying something for me to hear?"
Mm-hmm.
And then forget about it. I wrote, "Stop remembering that."
Quit remembering
that. But I also misspelled
that.
Remembering.
I'm looking.
Quit remember. It's like quit remembering that.
Oh,
it's
I didn't
like,
even notice
actually
that.
Actually misspelled remembering. I was hoping that the human brain would just fill in the blanks on that. But anyway, you have to take a long time to try to consider what I'm reverse engineering there. And again, it's asking a lot of people.
Quit remembering that is something that is going to stick with me forever. And whenever I hear forget about it now, I am going to say out loud to whomever I'm with, I hope it's you because you're the only person who will get it. I'm going to say, quit remembering that. We also, and I mentioned this really briefly on the show, we also just got done watching a Green Book over the weekend because we were on some podcast talking about it, some podcast. I should give him a shout out again.
Oh, I don't think I realized you watched it.
I know
you talked about it, and I know you guys were hoping it didn't win. But see, you may have said this yesterday, and I glazed over. But oh, so you watched it?
Yeah. What happened was Kevin and Emily were on our podcast talking about trailers leading up to the Oscars, and then after our show, we had an agreement that because their podcast looks at what they say, kind of quote unquote important movies, any movie that has been kind of deemed important by our culture, which often means looking back at kind of classics or things that have been stood the test of time and then discussing like, is this an important movie? Do we like this movie? How does it stand up in the canon? That's kind of the vibe of the Deadbeat Film Society podcast. So they asked us to come on the show and talk about whichever movie wins the best picture. So we made that blood pact after these messages a couple of weeks ago. And then when Green Book won, I got an email the next day from Kevin that just said, "God damn it," all one word, uppercase, because we're all going to have to watch the movie. And I did try to go into it with as much of an open mind as possible. I mean, whatever, you're going to sit there and watch a movie for 2 hours, like it won Best Picture. It's got Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali in it, which I'm sure I just totally butchered his name.
Mahershala
Ali. And, you know, so there's got to be some good takeaways. And boy, was it hard for me to find the good takeaways. So part of the movie that I kind of wasn't ready for was just kind of the, like, hey, we're big Italian family. And it's just like, it is so mockable. It, like, watching Green Book, like, just leave all of the cultural baggage aside. Like, leave, which you shouldn't do in these cases. Because it is a movie that is trying to make a statement about society and culture. But leave all of that aside. It's still just a hacky movie. I mean, it's just like watching an episode of Stella, which I like Stella, but I like Stella because it makes fun of stuff like this. Like, I have a very low gag threshold for anything that kind of has the smell of tropes, right? And this is just a series of tropes that don't even really make sense if you break them down. It's just like the filmmaker trying to get you to the part where you're supposed to feel X, Y, or Z. So anyway.
You mean that the guy who directed the seminal Greg Kinnear, Matt Damon vehicle Stuck on You?
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean that guy didn't bring it with the nuance?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? So anyway, I've just had this sort of like, so Veeves and I and Kevin and Emily to a maybe lesser degree have been just kind of making fun of this kind of like the way they portray Italians in this movie, which I just found
is
really
Viggo
funny.
Is Viggo Mortensen's character Italian American?
Yeah. And his like family is like his in-laws are. And Linda Cardellini, by the way, she's by far, I think she's a bright spot in the movie. I think she's a great actress. So like her family, his in-laws are like, you know, really Italian, and it takes place in the 60s, and it's like, they're watching the game, hey, be quiet, they're watching, why are you waking me up, I'm watching the game, which I know it sounds terrible when I do it, but it's not that, I feel like it's not that much better in the
movie.
Well,
we have some good tape for the No Point Conversion intro package next year.
Cutting this all out. Anyway,
Lynn?
So maybe that's what Lynn, I swear to God. I think that's why maybe quit remembering that really fell on fertile soil
really
for me. I just think that my head was in that place. And I will reiterate that I think anytime I hear somebody say forget about it in a movie or TV show, I hope I will echo with, hey, quit remembering that.
Well, we've reached the perfect moment for us to get into some good Oscar talk.
Or take a break. Here,
1.5 weeks after the event. But it's kind of funny that like, you know, that one for Best Picture. And we had some listeners who liked the movie. In fact, some people even emailed us, and that's great. I feel like if you liked something that we didn't like, I'm never trying to tell people to not like things within reason. So if you enjoyed that movie, I think that's just fine. But it's interesting that Bohemian Rhapsody won for Best Editing. Did you see that clip going around of an actual scene from Bohemian Rhapsody?
No. Well, it's just a clip?
It was demonstrating how bad the editing actually was, at least at times in the
really?
Film. And I didn't see the film, but it's it's the moment where they're meeting with like a high-powered, I don't know if it's an agent or a record label guy. But they're, and the guy is played by the dude that plays Littlefinger and Carchetti.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so it's, you know, the band, Queen, and they're sitting with that guy. They're in like some outdoor cafe somewhere. And it's just one of those, like, you want to talk about tropey. It's just one of those super tropey biopic moments where, like, the band meets with the guy who's going to make them something. But then Freddie Mercury, like, you know, speaks truth to power and, like, we're not going to do it just like everybody else. I mean, it's just like the worst writing. And the editing is like, somebody counted it. There's something like 97 cuts. I don't know the terminology. I'm not a video editor, but there's like 97 like reaction shots in like a minute of tape. So what'll happen is like Carchetti guy will say like, "So you're Queen," and then like Freddie Mercury will be like, "Yes, we are," and it's like a picture of him. And then Brian May will be like, "We are," and then it's Brian May, and then it's the bass player, and then it's this. And then every time someone says something or has a thought, they're on camera, and it's like totally disorienting. It's like you're in a hall of mirrors. It's objectively some of the worst editing I've ever seen in a film. Now maybe it's just that moment. Maybe like the concert scenes were pretty cool and sweeping. I didn't see the film, but it was really hilarious to me that it won for Best Editing when it contained at least that scene, which was very badly edited.
I totally have not seen this. This is the first I'm hearing about it, but just in case, is there any chance that this was a spoof, that somebody like chopped it and remixed it to make a joke?
Your suspicion is well-founded, well-warranted. This thing was around. I don't think so, is the short answer. This thing, like, when I saw it, yeah, that's, I mean, it would have been a very, like, it would be a very 2019 internet-y thing to do, to just, like, recut it and then have that one really, really funny guy who's Demi, whose last name I can never quite pronounce, have him, like, re-record a fake ending song for the movie, which he likes to do sometimes. He did one for Green Book. You want to talk about a layered joke. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, you've mentioned him before.
Every time we talk about him, the listeners email me a handy mnemonic to remember how to say his last name, and I forget the handy mnemonic.
Judge me, or I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it has something to do with judging me, right?
So, yeah, so that guy who's so, so funny, he does the 21st Night of September kind of meme that's been building over the years. He'll do this thing where he'll just like make up these crazy songs, and then I don't know how he does it, but he sort of like puts the lyrics on the TV. So he came up with this weird notion that the critics gave Green Book the best picture award because they liked the ending song, which he sings. He's watching the end of Green Book on his TV in his house, and he's singing it, but it's like a Smiths song.
Can I play it?
About
I have
Green
it here.
Book?
Does it work? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out together.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm going to set this up. I decided to rewatch Green Book this morning to see if I could figure out why it won Best Picture, and I guess the Academy just really loved Morrissey's end credits song.
I did the normal life for 30-something years and painted on the wax until today. I saw two black construction workers drink from water glasses. Silhouette through the glasses, both away. But then a Negro man paid me for a job to drive him through the South and to protect him. And that's how all my prejudices changed. Thanks to the Green Book, no perspective was
needed. How great is that?
And he actually put the credit. I think you mentioned it before. He put
the lyrics
on the screen.
Up on the screen.
I have it too small, so I can't actually read them. So I don't know if the listener is able to hear all those words either. But that's great.
That is that joke is very, very much like you said. You were you were really predisposed to be ready for Stop Remembering That, which we should probably use as a show title.
Oh, yeah.
Not to polish my own apple, but just because it'll save us, you know, trying to think one up at the end of the show. But, like, in the way that you were really ready for that joke, I was really ready for that Demi guy to be singing Morrissey about from Viggo Mortensen's perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's a must-see film. Check it out.
Indeed. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to tell you. Oh, my God. I rode in a self-driving Lyft car to the Las Vegas Convention Center yesterday, and I was positively giddy about it. So I want to tell you about that. And then give you a fuller report from the Pizza Expo in the voice of Morrissey.
Oh, great.
There are all kinds of doughs. I don't want to do it because I'll be really – it'll look – if you have my Morrissey impression right next to Demi's Morrissey impression, mine's not going to come off well. So I'm gonna rethink that idea and then come up with some other good ideas during this break, and then we'll be right back with more TBTL.
The closer I get, you're wasting your time. The more you ignore me, the closer I get, you're wasting your time. I will be.
I'd like to dedicate this song to whoever does the iTunes podcast rankings. We are coming for you.
That took a little bit. That was not the delay in the line. That was the delay in my brain.
Oh, man. That's one of those songs that, like, it's dangerous for us to start a segment with that song because my instinct is to just let the whole thing play because I love. Oh, my God. I talked about this so many times over the course of this show's history overall. 2000 and however many episodes it's been. 2,851 in a collector series. But that summer that I worked for that plumbing company, after my junior year of high school, when I knew that I had gotten someone pregnant, but nobody else did, and I just had this very, very, very... I mean, I don't even think the job was that bad, but being a teenager who didn't have a good work ethic, you know, working at, like, just kind of as the do-whatever-they-need-you-to-do guy at a plumbing company, which mostly just meant, like, sorting things and... It was just a pretty miserable summer for me in a lot of ways, but I just listened to the living tweedle out of the Smiths and Morrissey, and it just, oh man, I love that music so much.
I only know like two songs by him, and maybe like four when you include the Smiths. It's a huge blank spot for me. I did want to tell you, everything that's going on in Vegas is way more interesting than this, but I had one thing I wanted to share with you that's music-related. Yesterday, I had to run up to Lynwood briefly, a place where I spend almost zero time. There's a mall up there. It's about, I don't know, like 20 minutes north of where I live in Seattle. And I just don't have excuse to get up there much, but I had to pick something up. I had an errand. And I found myself right outside Silver Platters Records, which I didn't know that was up there.
Wow. A lot of Silver Platters up there. They have a Silver Platters up there.
It's
man,
huge.
That looms large in my childhood.
I believe it, because that used to be, like, they used to be in some of the Seattle neighborhoods, right? Silver Platters is like...
Yeah, there was one where the light rail station is going in at Northgate Mall.
Okay.
That used to be a Weight Watchers and a Silver Platters, which is kind of funny branding if you think about it next to each other. Like
Silver Platters.
How many points? How many points was that meal you had on your silver platter?
Right. Anyway, they're a music store. They sell, you know, CDs, vinyl, and DVDs and stuff too. I mean, this place is huge up there. It's just like I don't get out of the city all that often. So like you just go up 20 minutes and like, oh, people have land up here to build giant stores and they sell cassette tapes there. So my point is, and I'll make this very quick, I did something that I have not done in probably 30 years or more, which is I bought a brand new cassette tape that is unopened. It's an album that is relatively new-ish that I've been wanting to listen to anyway, and I think you will like it, or you already like it. Courtney Barnett's new record, Tell Me How You Really Feel. I've seen posters for it.
I don't think I've listened to much of it.
And so my thing is, like, I couldn't not buy this thing. By the way, cassettes are still about $14. I'm not saying it was the wisest investment. It definitely, you know, I could listen to this on the Spotify that I pay for. I understand all of that. I realize this is all part of a midlife crisis. But I have errands to run today, and I need to take a bus ride down to Capitol Hill where I need to, like, kind of – I'm meeting somebody for lunch, and then I'm meeting somebody for dinner down there. So I have all day to kick around Cap Hill. So I'm going to, like – load up my Walkman and take my new cassette tape, and like, I'm not going to listen to other things on my phone. I'm just going to listen to this tape like I did when I was a young man, and that's how I used to get to really know records, something that I kind of, you know, don't do as much anymore because I skip around so much. So I'm looking forward to my little 14-year-old fantasy that I'm going to be doing today, and I wish I hadn't put it like that.
That sounds totally fun to me, and I know exactly like that sense of like when you, I know when you went on your mission to buy some kind of a, like a Walkman tape deck thing, floppy disk, power glove. I know that we talked about this at length, so I won't bore the listeners yet again, but that whole like feeling of when you're young and you got your hands on like a Walkman, or depending on the age of the listeners, maybe a Discman, or for our very young listeners, I guess it would just be an MP3 player. But whatever the device is, the idea that you could just move through the world with your music in your ears, like sitting, you know, for me, it'd be like, you know, be a family road trip with my really janky Discman, which was not a Discman. It was made by Philips, and it was enormous. It was basically the size of a home CD player, except you could just put like 30,000 batteries in it. And then I guess they're like, I guess if you want to do this, you can. We can't legally stop you from taking this places.
Huh, but 12D like, batteries for a Walkman. That's interesting.
Like every 2 months, I reinvested the total cost of the CD player in batteries.
Yep.
Forget putting the pregnancy tests behind the counter. Put the batteries behind the counter, because LB's got sticky fingers and he needs to get him some batteries to feed his Jesus Jones listening habit.
You're unbelievable.
Because me sitting in the back, hey, that was pretty good. That was much better than my Morrissey going into the break. Well, unless you edited that out. Unless I called you later and said, could you edit out me trying to sing like Morrissey?
Oddly, but, I just edited that in. And I had a panic attack when I did it because I wasn't sure if I was doing EMF or Jesus Jones for a second.
You are. That was EMF. Okay. But that's okay.
Oh, damn it.
Jesus Jones is right here right now.
Oh, right. Damn it.
Okay. Let me see. Morrissey doing Jesus Jones.
Right here, right now.
Now it's sounding more like Adam Sandler in Hotel Transylvania 2. Oh, man. Anyway, I clearly think of Morrissey as being like some sort of a vampire. Like, I want to suck your blood. Mm-hmm. I'm Morrissey.
He's got that vibe.
But not any animal blood. You know, his thing is like, he would, like, there are certain venues he wouldn't play because there was a Starbucks, like, in the building, and the Starbucks would not get rid of the meat products they sell. Like, and you know, I mean, look, I'll try not to get on any kind of soapbox about this all 6 months into my like eating less meat. But I don't know. I used to think Morrissey was really crazy for that stuff, and then the meat is murder, and he's extremely animal rights focused. And I still think that there's a way to talk about that stuff so that you don't make people feel judged and disliked. And I think that's a more effective thing if you're trying to change behaviors. But on the other hand, I guess I got to give the guy credit. He's been on that for a minute, you know? Like, he's at least been consistent.
Yeah, and I got to say, I just really want to get to you talking about the electric car, so let's not belabor this. But
temper your expectations.
I meant self-driving. But
it was also electric, though, so you're not wrong.
Oh, there you go. Let's focus on the electric mechanics of it, please. Anyway, there is something, I guess, when it's a cause that I believe in. Now, obviously, I'm a meat eater. I'm not a vegetarian, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that cause. I understand the vegan outlook and the vegetarian outlook. And if you're somebody who has, through your own kind of art and action and you know, self-drive, created yourself as somebody with so much power that you can wield that just says, yeah, tell Starbucks to get rid of the sous vide eggs, or I'm not playing the theater that is attached to, and they say, we're not doing that. You're like, okay, then I'm walking. Like, I really appreciate that this is something noble that he believes in. I think it's noble. And he says, yeah, you need me more than I need you, so you're not going to get rid of the eggs and the bacon, then I'm not playing here. Get somebody else. You know, get Robert Smith.
Yeah, he's not making his wallet fatter or his life easier by doing that.
Yeah.
You know. So you got to kind of I think you've got to respect how, even if you disagree with it, which I you know, again, I think that would you be surprised to know I've never met Morrissey? I feel like he would be so unpleasant to be around, and I say this as a huge fan of his music.
Yeah, I don't know much about him.
I have nothing to base that on. It's just it's like, because every song, he has a song that's "I've come to wish you an unhappy birthday because you're evil and you lie, and if you should die, I won't feel slightly sad, but I may feel slightly sad, but I won't cry."
I do know
that's
that
like,
song,
and that's an upbeat Morrissey number. So
that's like, when you dance to.
I can't help but just sort of like. I can't help but assume that – and it's probably not. You know what I mean? He's probably a swell dude. But anyway, yeah, I'm not – I don't know if – he doesn't seem like the most chill guy. Like if you had him over for dinner and you had not like cleared out everything in the house, like I don't think – it doesn't seem like he'd be hashtag chill if he noticed you had a little beef jerky in the snack cabinet. You know, he wouldn't be like, "Hey, well, different strokes for different folks," you know.
I don't think he wants me cutting up his carrots on the same cutting board that I used to make my sausage.
Right. But you're right. But you are right that you know, I have to respect him for picking a point of view, or I guess, you know, embracing this lifestyle and then really kind of sticking with it and then doing things that are really making his own life more of a hassle. So, you know, there's that. Hey, could you, before we, I don't want to forget this or gloss over it or what have you, could you cue up our special appreciation music so I can specially appreciate our donors of the day?
What?
Thank you, baby.
Our first donor of the day we want to thank today, Cheyenne Lively of Bellingham, Washington.
Another hamster? There's
a Bellinghamster named Cheyenne that's donating to the show, and I don't think I've met them. I feel like I've met every TBTL listener in Bellingham because there's 10 of them and it's a small town, but I think Cheyenne escaped my radar. Cheyenne, thank you very much. Dan Sundberg of Seattle, Washington, thank you. Harrison Beal of Alexandria, Virginia. Harrison's name rings a strong bell, and I can't remember the context. I think that we've definitely interacted with Harrison via the email and maybe even in real life. So Harrison, thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for being part of the show. John Davis of Edgewater, Colorado. Paula Fowler of beautiful Burien, Washington. And then Josh Corey of...
Oh.
I always forget this part. DPOAE.
I know that it's a military it's a military post office thing, right? Or no, diplomatic. Yeah. DPO is diplomatic post office. Armed Forces is AE. So that's all we know.
So that's all we're allowed to know.
That's all, exactly.
About where Josh is.
What's Josh been up to?
I don't know. Deep state stuff, presumably.
Probably trying to get that money back from the from the police officer who got on a train with it. I'm just talking Patriot. It doesn't make any sense and it's not entertaining.
You are. What size were the dimes that Josh was...
They weren't American dimes.
Hey, look forward to more of this, everybody. We're launching a little project that we're going to talk about coming up when we get all of the details worked out. But it is related to the show Patriot, and it will be a lot of that. So anyway, for now, though, let's focus on Josh, Paula, John, Harrison, Dan, and Cheyenne. Thank you all so much for supporting TBTL. Thanks for making this possible. I had occasion to explain the podcast to a few bewildered people yesterday at the pizza convention, and even last night at dinner. We went to Momofuku. Well, the Vegas version of Momofuku. Momofuku is David Chang's restaurant in New York. It's very, very beloved. And then because this is Las Vegas and they have this kind of this verisimilitude going where they have the Vegas version of like every single, you know, famous thing from everywhere else in the country. It really is a kind of an odd thing where my point, by the way, related to the donors of the day is I was explaining to this really cool guy from Indiana who I met about TBTL. And I always am, you know, a little self-deprecating about it. But I'm also very proud of the fact that this thing exists. And what happened was I was going to bed kind of early. Our producer from CBS and this guy from this pizza place in Indiana he runs called King Dough. We went to a speakeasy mezcal bar or something, tequila bar. And I was bailing for the night because I had to get up early to do this and, not drinking and that kind of thing. So I was just kind of like, all right, you guys have fun. And I was like, I got to get up early and do this podcast. And he was like, so what's the story on that? And I was like, oh, well, the co-host is in Seattle. We do it every day. And like, I'm very proud of this show. And even though I am always talking about how bad it is, if it's bad, it's only because of me and Andrew. But if it's good, it's because of the listeners, like Cheyenne, Dan, Harrison, John, Paula, and Josh. So thank you very much. We went to this Momofuku place. And the other thing, Andrew, that's so crazy. I wouldn't go so far as to say crazy, but I think there's a section of the Cosmo Hotel restaurant area that is literally just Portland South. Like, I think that the concept is Portland South. Have you heard of Pock Pock?
Yes. Dan Pashman mentioned it on the show the other day when he was on, and I hadn't heard of it before that. And you don't know this because we're in different places, but I looked up Pock Pock is like, oh, that sounds good. And I spent the rest of the show just clicking through photos of their food and torturing myself. It looks so good.
It's really incredible. But I didn't realize, it started in Portland. It was just this little, I think it was probably a food cart or something in Portland years ago. And I've been to it a bunch of times. I had no idea. I guess it's expanded. They had one in New York or have one in New York. So they have one here in this casino in Vegas. For some reason, it's weird for me to see a Portland thing in Vegas. I feel like this is oil and water.
Uh-huh.
This is cheap cologne and hand-forged artisanal leather bibs.
We built a giant fake recreation of Powell's books. Can you believe
this? Exactly. Like, these things do not go together. But this little warren of restaurants has got Pock Pock in it. It's got they serve Stumptown coffee, and there was another thing in there that was like from Portland. I was like, what is going on in here? But anyway, Momofuku was quite delicious. But because I'm not eating meat like a real Morrissey, everything I ordered was veggie, and it was delicious, but it was all really spicy. And let's just say, five courses of different kinds of deliciously spiced Asian food. It was a touch and go walk on the sky bridge back to the hotel is all I'm trying to tell you.
For everybody, although only you knew it.
Exactly. Nobody knew how much danger they were really in as they got into the elevator with me at the Waldorf. Before all of that, I in the morning, as I typically do, if I'm going somewhere and I'm in a town where I don't have a car, I called up the Lyft app and it said, you're eligible to take a driverless car or a self-driving car. And I was like, yes. So I was so excited. And Andrew, I've already now oversold this to you. I apologize. You're going to be kind of let down. But I'm standing there in the waiting area outside of the hotel and it's showing me that the car's on the way. And I'm like, I'm so excited, but I'm nervous for the car because I'm noticing how everyone's parking and like everyone who's pulling into the hotel kind of like drop off pickup area. And some people are parked haphazardly and there's like, it's a fancy hotel. So there's like fancy limos and shit. And I'm like, I'm worried for the driverless car that it's going to crash into some of these limos. Cause I'm like, it doesn't know they're here. Like they're not like, these cars are not in the normal place that a car would be. How is the driverless car going to know about it? I was very stressed out.
That's the feeling that a parent might have when they see their 5-year-old go up to the 10-year-olds on the playground and want to play with them.
Exactly. Except in this case, it was a BMW, electric car powered by something called like Aptiv. So that's what it said on the app anyway. So I'm like watching the dot. And my first sense that something is a little like that, so something about this is not going to be the experience I'm looking for, is the driver is listed as a female person named Erica. And I'm literally, Andrew, so worried for the car that I want to call them and say, there's cars here. They're kind of parked a little weird. Like I want to tell her or maybe she's the car. I don't know. My Erica, the car. Great TV show from the 50s. I want to warn somebody about the situation at the hotel. So I call And it's not a woman or a robot or a car that answers. It's some dude. And I go, is this Erica the car? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. I go, is this a self-driving car? And he goes, yeah. And I go, are you going to be able to come to the lobby? Or are you able to come to the waiting area of the hotel? And he goes, yeah, we're on the way. We're 2 minutes away. I was like, oh, okay. He goes, we'll explain everything when we get there. So I was like, okay. So the car pulls in, and not only is there a one human named Erica in there, there's another human, I forget his name, with a laptop sitting in the passenger seat, and Erica is driving the car.
Mm-hmm. I wondered. That's the very first thing I thought when you sent me that text yesterday. You said, I just rode in a self-driving car for the first time, looking forward to telling you about it. And I was like, I wonder if there was a person in there behind the wheel. And then also, I wonder how much interaction there was between man, or in this case, woman and machine.
So they pull in, and I go from being super excited about this to being angry at the people that are in the car.
Yeah.
Because I expected Knight Rider to pull up, like, unassisted. And not only do I have a Lyft driver, I have more than the average number of people operating the vehicle.
This is the opposite of what you want.
It is totally the opposite. And, like, I get in, and the guy is just, like, he's clearly got a spiel. So his deal is he works for the company called Aptiv. He goes, we're a company, we're based in Ireland. And I'm like thinking, oh, tax dodge. No offense to our Irish listeners, but I don't think it's that Ireland is leading the world in driverless technology. I think they're leading the world in not charging taxes. But anyway, he's like, we're a company based in Ireland. And he just starts going into this whole spiel that I really didn't exactly ask him about. Now, I did have questions about the car. But first thing is, I get in there and he goes, we have some rules. He goes, you must wear your seatbelt and no eating or drinking. And I actually had a water bottle with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. I'm just like, everything about this ride is getting less relaxing and fun than a normal ride in a Lyft car. And I said, oh, so the first, but literally before any of that happened, the first thing I said when I walked up to the car is like, are you driving the car? I said that quite judgingly to Erica because I was very excited about no driver. And this person was actively driving. And the guy seriously said, we'll explain it all when you get in. So I was like, okay. So then he tells me the thing about the seatbelt and no eating and drinking. And then he explains that the car could drive by itself and pick me up in this place. But on private property, they, for liability reasons, and he said out of respect, they drive the car. So Erica she's switched the car into manual. She's just driving the car. And now we pull out of the parking area or the whatever, and we're on our way to the Las Vegas Convention Center. And I am just dying for them to switch the car into driverless car mode. And so finally we get out on Las Vegas Boulevard, and I'm like, are you going to do it? Are you doing it? Are you switching it over? And then she switches it over to, robot driver. But then she is required to hover her hands over the steering wheel and hover her feet over the gas and brake.
Just the whole time on edge, basically.
And I asked her, I was like, does that get tiring? She goes, yeah, kind of does. She goes, they train us how to do it. Like, there's a whole system for, like, ghost driving the whip.
It makes sense, right? Like, we're in a transition. The point of self-driving cars isn't going to be that we're always going to have to be hovering over it. Like, eventually we need to get there, but right now it's a little dangerous, so everything's being tested, and so they have to have that. But yeah, it sounds incredibly uncomfortable. And from a passenger perspective, this doesn't sound good at all. It sounds like a step down from a regular service.
The problem was, exactly, the issue was really my expectation when I saw this thing, like, you're getting a self-driving car. The difference in my if they would have said, hey, do you want to ride in a test car that has some technicians in it? And, like, you know, you're going to find out about this cool technology that's, like, you know, still kind of in beta mode. That would have been one thing. I would have still voted for it. I would have still optioned for it because mm-hmm. I just am curious about it. But, like, it was a real come down for me, and it was the difference of expectations versus reality, I guess. But, like, he's just sort of, again, the other thing that I just didn't love was that this guy's spiel was so, like, Well, you know when someone's giving you a spiel and you can tell that they've given the spiel 1,000 million times?
Yes.
And I don't know if they just don't have the energy to, like, pretend like it's the first time, but I'm like, can we get some foreplay here conversationally? Can we, like,
get that guy from Hawaii. Foreplay. He'll help.
Yeah. Oh, good old foreplay. Honestly, that guy would be great at this job.
Yeah.
Hey, so welcome to the car.
Right.
Oh, what are you reading?
What you reading?
Back there.
No food or drink. Sorry. Management asked that we don't have food or drink in this car.
And then I would say, you know, you could have just gotten right to the no food or drink in the back of the car thing.
Yeah, but you're not a psycho.
So we did have, I will say, we did have a brief, beautiful few moments where we were on Las Vegas Boulevard. The car was driving itself. It changed lanes by itself. And like at the towards the end of the drive, the guy said, well, how's it going? How do you like the drive? Anything you would suggest? And I said, honestly, I go, don't take this the wrong way, but my only disappointment is that you two are in the car.
Right. I'm sure that's not the first time he's heard that.
I'm sure they hear that all the time because – and this goes to my overall nature of like – I say this a lot on the show, but I'm non-conspiratorial to the point of being overly trusting of like institutions and people. Like I'm just like, they're probably not lying about that. I mean, current administration notwithstanding. But like, and the same thing with technology, I would 100% trust that car to drive me. I would have gotten in, if that car pulled up with no human in it, I would have been so giddy to get in the car and just be like, take me anywhere. You know what? Skip this pizza thing. Let's go to the desert together. We're married now, you and me. Car, I love you. You get me.
You've been spending too much time in deserts, by the way. I'm getting a little worried about you.
Yeah. Well, there's gold in them thar hills. What if one time I came back just like a crazed 49er, like with scraggly beard?
I would be worried about that. If I thought you could grow a beard, I'd be worried about it. I would.
Can we agree that if I grew one, it would be scraggly, though?
Yeah, I guess so. Yes.
So that was and then like honestly, the almost at the moment that we got up to speed. Without anyone driving, even though Erica was ghost driving the car, they took a right turn, and then before I knew it, we were back within the outer rings of the convention center, which we were back in manual mode. And I was just like, I was so bummed out. It was a very brief moment where I felt truly free because it was nothing but me and the robot car and the annoying guy on the laptop and the professional pretend driver Erica. For just a brief moment, it was just us and the wind, and it was really cool. So I am very excited for this technology to keep evolving. I guess what the guy explained was they've mapped all of Las Vegas, or at least I should say all of like the strip and the kind of areas people tend to go to. So it's what I mean by that is like they have this company, this Irish company. What if it was a co-production of Guinness and a self-driving car? That would be or Jameson. That'd be perfect. Like, hey, guess what? We're from a country where most people are drunk most of the time.
We need these things.
So we decided to – we really need to get out in front on this, like, robot car thing. But anyway, apparently this company has, like – they have gone around and literally, like – I don't know how this works from a software standpoint, but they have, like, personally as a company mapped the – all of the strip, all of the hotels, all of the like pull-in areas, so that they have their own like data. So their cars could do great in this environment, but the car would automatically shut off if it moved outside of the mapped area, he explained to me, which is why I did not hijack the car and go into the desert to my gold claim. Because it was, you know, like you said, Andrew, it's reasonable that they have to take baby steps for so many reasons. One, there's a lot of liability around it. Two, like every time there is a crash, even when a Tesla crashes and it's in like a driver assist mode, like has happened a couple times, or that one time very unfortunately that a Tesla hit a person and killed them, it kind of sets the whole conversation back. So they have to err on the side of caution, which I get. But like I said, I was a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, but I mean, part of you wasn't ready for that at all. When you were sitting there waiting, didn't you? I mean, even before you made the phone call,
I thought maybe there would be someone. I thought there might be a technician because I, you know, I've read enough about it to know that we're not quite at the mode where cars are literally just zooming around Jetson style to wherever. So I thought there might be a technician, but I kind of expected the technician to just be like literally doing their nails. Like I wanted the technician to be like, usually when it's a customer service type of experience, you want the person you're dealing with to be very plugged in. I wanted this person to be unplugged.
Yeah.
I wanted them to be like eating, like stretched out, eating a gyro, kind of like on their phone. Just like I wanted them to be as unconnected to the driving experience as possible, because that would make me feel like the car was being the most robot controlled.
You wanted them to actually like crawl in the back seat to like grab something that got like kind of wedged in that back part of the car between the trunk and the back seat.
I wanted them to give me – I wanted them to be putting on and taking off a jacket constantly in that really scary way.
Right, while holding a taco.
Yeah, like I wanted them to be giving me what would, under other circumstances, be the worst customer service experience you could ever have. Right. So that's kind of what I expected. I literally expected the car to pull up totally by itself with a kind of just like uninterested, possibly Gen Y-er or millennial. Although I realized the other day, we're only like a few years on the other side of being millennials ourselves. Do you know we're on the low edge of Generation X?
Yeah, we barely made it in there. We're actually, I consider ourselves to be the lost generation. Actually, what is the lost generation? That was the, was that the Beats? Was that the people who were coming of age in the, no, that would be the, that'd be, who's the lost generation?
I don't know. I've never even heard of that.
Oh, am I making things up?
No, but I guess maybe they were really lost my awareness anyway.
Came of age during World War I. Lost in this respect means disoriented, wandering, directionless, at a recognition that there was great confusion and aimlessness among the war survivors in the early post-war years.
I mean, that's probably PTSD, right? I mean, I'm not. It sounds like I'm laughing, but it's like that's probably... probably PTSD that we didn't have a name for, I would imagine.
And also, though, I mean, is it also speaking to the country itself? I'm assuming that this is – because you had – and now I'm looking here. It looks like they're mentioning expats. You have a bunch of the American writers who go overseas. They're kind of like part of the lost generation. And then and also I think America was sort of seeking an identity between the two wars as well, right? Didn't the U.S. get very kind of insular before World War II? Well, anyway, this is not the podcast for this talk.
I haven't gotten to that part of the History Channel yet, but I am looking forward to it.
You started with World War II in color, and you're working your way back.
Yep, that's what I'm doing. That's the update on the self-driving car. It was, you know, it was not as exciting as I was hoping, but it was still kind of something. And by the way, I'll probably take another one in about 20 minutes from now, because I think that they're, like, really hard. I don't even think I have the option of... if I'm going to use Lyft here from this hotel to the convention center, I don't think I have the option of a non-driverless, whatever you're going to call it, a non-self-driving car, quote-unquote self-driving.
Hmm. I thought you did choose it, though, right? You had the option.
No, it...
Oh, I thought
I can do this right now.
You.
This is some real... Guys, buckle up. This is some real-time podcasting. We're going on an adventure together. I'm going to click on the app. If there was a way for me to opt out of it, I couldn't figure out how to do it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, by the way, I'm gonna give Erica 5 stars for that ride. Even I mean, she did a good job. Let's see here. Okay. I'm sorry. I know this is very boring, but I'm just trying to figure out if it's gonna tell me self-driving. I don't. Yeah. Oh. You know what? I could switch to economy. You're right. I just wasn't looking at the right part of the app. Mm. I'm sorry. I did have the option of not doing, but I'm going to do self-driving again today to see if I get the same crew. And this time, when I get in and the guy starts to do his thing, I'm going to be like, zip it. I did this yesterday.
Give them the spiel first. Be like, first of all, I'm going to explain this. Just like go up to the window and say, I'm going to explain this all to you when I get in the car.
Yes. I like that'd be kind of great. Oh, the reason you can't eat and drink apparently is because he said the back seat, you're sitting on top of the basically like laptop that is this particular BMW. You know, it's – yeah, you're sitting on top of the computer. And if you spill water on the back seat, it could seep into the computer.
Yeah, that seems problematic. I also wonder if it's also like if they're partially worried about herky-jerky stops.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Right, because of the – I mean, believe me, this is the thing. I know we were done with this conversation, and now we're going back to it. But that car is very, it's much smoother when it's being operated by a robot than by a human. Mm. You know, that was nothing against Erica, but it's just like we humans are, we're just not as calculating in the same way. Now, the other thing, though, is that I asked him, will this thing change lanes to get, you know, if like you're in a slow lane and or if you're in a lane where traffic's not moving and then the, like, will it shift, change lanes to get there faster? And he said no. And that was, I was like, ooh. Mm. I mean, when every car is self-driving, it will be so efficient. I mean, in, I don't know, 20 years or something. It will all be so efficient and worked out that it probably won't matter, because part of the like why certain lanes back up and other lanes don't is human decision making, I would imagine. But for now, I don't want to get in a car that's going to pick what lane it's in and then not vary from that, because like, what if that lane sucks?
Yeah. You're picturing a world like is it WALL-E, where everything is just kind of zipping along and nobody gets in anybody's way because it's all automated. Am I even thinking of the right thing?
Yeah.
I feel like I feel like there's things zipping around in WALL-E. Yeah.
I think WALL-E, I think it takes a turn.
Yeah, before it becomes the desolate, you know, hellscape of WALL-E. But anyway, well, I'm all out of self-driving car talk and WALL-E talk.
Okay, good.
Clearly, but answer me this: are you full of pizza? Like, honestly, like you said that you've run into so many tens down there. There are so many conferences in Las Vegas. Is this one that is almost like more outside visitors there for the pizza deal, you know, as opposed to another industry convention?
Right.
Let's say piping, Luke gets it from A mm-hmm. to B.
Oh my God. There were a couple of conversations I overheard about like pizza boxes and about like oven technology that was real nut flange.
The structural dynamics of
real
pizza.
it was the Vasgersian, and I'm just jumping topics within the universe of Patriot, but it was, let's just put it this way, probably more outside, more tourists, let's say convention tourists. There's probably more convention tourists at this than there would have been at, say, a piping conference, and less than at, say, a porn conference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. That, you know, is, they like do somewhere have that in huge the middle. Porn conference there in Vegas as well. Like the awards.
They do, and I mean, I know that, like, I think that one is almost all, I have not been to that, but my sense is that it's like, it's 90% is dudes who want to go and meet these porn stars, and then 10% somebody who makes the packaging for DVDs or something.
Right,
and
exactly.
That's,
we have a new way of protecting the DVD. This sleeve is slightly, if you notice, it's slightly wider but shorter.
Well, that's the thing that I was really struck by at this convention is, like, I kind of knew this going in. Like, there's, I don't know, 7,000 people here. They're here to sell or buy something, and it's not just all like pizza. It's the, like, when you order a pizza and you take it to go or it's delivered and it's sitting on that kind of like corrugated thing in the bottom of the box.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That then collects up all the grease. There's like 10 different booths selling that.
That's interesting.
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I think that stuff is fascinating.
It is really, really, really granular. And then also, but to answer your question of am I full of pizza? Yes, I am, because the thing is, everybody there is making pizza. If they sell ovens, shout out to Woodstone, where I...
Oh, yeah.
So Woodstone is a Bellingham company, and listener Matt works there. And last night as I was leaving, I, believe it or not, found myself very hungry at the end of the day, because I've been trying to kind of pace myself and not just... Also, again, back to my terminal smugness, I saw so many people just walking around just like just cramming pizza in their face, all like people, like it was like, you know how when you're at the at Costco and there's samples, I know you don't go to Costco a ton, but like, just trust me on this, there's a whole sample culture at Costco, and people get really weird. It's sort of like the culture around when we used to work at Cairo, and like, hey, free Dick's burgers, you know, and like, I know I've been on this rant before, but it's like, it does something weird to our brain where people who can very much afford to buy their own cheeseburgers would just – they would knife their coworker to get to that table full of $1.92 cheeseburgers.
Yep.
It's and it's not rational because they could everyone could get in their respective car and drive to Dick's and buy as many cheeseburgers as they want. Anyway, so this is a little bit of that too, where you get some people that are clearly like they're just grabbing everything that's out for free and just like eating it. And it was very important to me that I not look like that, which again is a lot of that's in my own head and my own bullshit hangups, but suffice it to say, I was actually really hungry as we were leaving. Everything closed down at 5, like boom. Every booth was empty. And I'm walking with our producer and our crew, and I'm like, I'm really hungry right now. And I just go over to this random table, and there's just like this pizza that's out. And I start eating like cheese pizza, and I'm like, this is really good. I start eating, and I look up at the sign, and it's Woodstone from Bellingham.
You didn't even know.
Out of like, I don't know, 1,000 booths, I'm eating the leftover pizza that's just sitting out there. It's unattended pizza at this point. Which also wouldn't have been a terrible show title.
Yeah, nor would Terminal Smugness. Wondered if people were actually eating full slices or if it's one of those things where you think like, hey, me and my buddy, we're going to the pizza convention. Put it on the calendar and you're just looking forward to going and like it's just going to be like Willy Wonka, only a trade show for pizza. And then you get there and it's like, yes, here, have this tiny little, you know, they're handing out little bites of pizza instead of actual slices. I got burned that way one time at a food truck festival in Portland. In real Portland, not Vegas, Portland. And I was just starving. And actually, I was there with two
Old
different...
Old Portland.
Yes. I was there with two different sets of friends who kind of, I think, met for the first time there. And so I'm kind of juggling that. Like, oh, well, okay, I'll meet up with you guys and then you guys. But also, we like didn't eat all day. We're just like, oh, my God, free food. You pay to get in. And then it's just all kinds. I'm just like, I am going to tuck into some falafel. I am going to just embarrass you guys when I get my hands on that falafel. And then it's kind of like, oh, you wait in line for 5 hours and they give you a tiny little cup of their new sauce and a tiny little bit of falafel to try, you know, try it on.
This was sort of in between like a full piece of pizza and like a teeny tiny, you know, sample that would leave you unsatisfied. Like mm-hmm. I would say, first of all, what was in short supply was a traditional wedge of pizza, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what,
everything
yes, what I'm getting
square,
at.
Square.
Mm-hmm. I like square everything pizza, was kind, though, yeah.
It was kind of artisanal. Like, there was, mm-hmm. you know, there was, like, so there was, it was a whole variety of different sort of spins on pizza. And it was, like, there were oven companies there, and then they would have pizza out because they're showing that their oven cooks it. There's a flour, multiple flour companies that were there with, they had pizza out to prove that their flour makes for good pizza, including one of them that uses all flour from the Skagit Valley, and any company that made anything wanted to like give you some sample of their thing, and unless it was like there was a cheese company or there was a bunch of cheese companies, so I ate a lot of cheese cubes, and then there were a lot of meat companies which I swerved on. But I did end up consuming, even though I was trying to be pretty – like today is going to be the day I think I'm going to eat a lot of pizza and they're going to film it to just sort of have that element of the story. So – and then there's also going to be tonight the Pizza Olympics, Andrew, which is – or whatever. I don't know if they're called the Olympics, but the like pizza games where there are these categories like dough stretching and also acrobatic pizza tossing, which I watched some of yesterday and it was – unbelievable. On stage with hype music, people throwing pizza dough like under their legs. Imagine like somebody who you see at the park by themselves with a frisbee showing off. You mm-hmm. know that guy?
Yeah, I do know that guy.
That guy with
he
pizza
also
dough.
You'd be surprised to learn has a slack line.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Does his ferret help him set it up?
Okay, that's just, all right. Let's not be cruel.
That's enough. Stop that now. I need to save all my scorn for the self-driving car operators I'm about to see. It's incredible to watch. And one of the things that's amazing is there's so much flour left on the stage that there has to be a crew of people to sweep up the flour in between performances, because the whole key to making this dough throwing like work is a shitload of flour on it, and then you don't want the next person to slip.
Yeah.
So there's like a pit crew that comes out and sweeps up the flour in between acrobatic pizza tossing.
That would be my job. I would do that. I think about that all the time. Like, the jobs that are tangential to sporting events and the like, we'll just group this in with sporting events and be like, oh, yeah, I don't watch basketball, but every now and then it'll kind of be on in a bar or something, and I see those guys, you know, after somebody falls down, then somebody comes in from the sidelines with their little mop, and they just mop it up quickly, and I'm like, that looks so satisfying. I could be the sweat mopper.
It was endearing because the guy who was emceeing the event was like, would give a shout out to the people on the broom, and the people that were sweeping up, I think they worked for the event center. Like, they're not pizza people. They're mm-hmm. like custodial staff. So I was kind of stoked for them because they were like smile, you know, they were laughing. It was like, this was a more high profile custodial assignment than like the tip, like cleaning up after the pipe fitting convention or whatever the piping.
Yeah.
On the subject of which, one of the guys that we interviewed, because he runs a vegan and vegetarian pizza place in St. Louis called Pizza Head, which was very relevant to my interests of late, being the Morrissey of podcasting as I am. He gave a talk on the kind of business of running a pizza place, and it was pretty great because at the end he was just extemporating and he said, you know, like, thanks for being here, you guys. He goes, like, this is really great. He goes, my other job before this was I used to invest in self-storage units. Mm-hmm. He was an investor in self-storage units. And he goes, and I used to go to these conferences for self-storage here in Vegas. And he goes, and it was so boring.
Yeah.
He goes, this is so much better. He goes, it was just about, like, locks and doors.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine a self-storage convention? Like, what, how much is there to say? He goes, it was about, like, what color are you painting your self-storage operation? Like, it feels like there's just only so much you can do with that. Pizza is so much more varied, and there's so much more you can, I think, so many more angles to kind of mess with, tweak, you know.
Yes, passing a storage place always gives me, like, kind of a, I don't know, it's almost like there's a ghost in the room and you feel a shiver. Like,
yeah.
It's almost
melancholy.
Like that. It, doesn't it? Like, and it doesn't matter where they
yeah.
are. Like, there's one, like, right kind of along the highway as you're getting near downtown Seattle that I pass all the time as you're coming in from the north. You can probably picture it, Luke, kind of near REI there that you can see from the 5. And, like, I just pass it and it just always, I don't know, it always just kind of, it creeps me out is the wrong word, but it's something around there.
Well, then that's a cool one. That one is built,
mm-hmm.
that's at South Lake Union, and it's kind of like got this exostructure on it to kind of make it look like a cool building.
Isn't it weird? They have this, yeah, and it's got this, the way they mess around with perspective on the painting of the building, so it almost looks like there are like you are looking into this three-dimensional storage container, but it's just the way they've painted it.
But that's, like, to me, that I know what you mean, although the one you've cited, that one I'm okay with because of the amount of energy they put into kind of making it work in the environment. But to me, it's like exurban, like an exurban self-storage, like, farm. Like, you're just driving down the freeway somewhere kind of in Nowheresville, and there's just like a giant long, you know, orange rectangle of self-storage units. That gives me a real bad feeling.
Yeah.
I think it's because with some exceptions, it's almost never going great when you're using a self-storage place. Like, either you've had to move and the place you're moving into, you can't fit your stuff, but you can't bring yourself to get rid of your stuff. I mean, there's the occasional classic car that you just want to store somewhere or whatever, but they are places of sort of, they represent some kind of, like, they're a solution to a problem that most people wish they weren't having.
That's a good point. Even if the one thing could be maybe it's like a very temporary situation where you actually are moving into a bigger place, but you don't have the keys yet, so you need it for a month or something. But you're right. In most cases, at the very least, you're downsizing for some reason. In a lot of cases, it means maybe somebody is gone and you have to go through all their stuff and you don't have a place to put it yet. Like, you're right. Not to mention just the assumption that I've had my entire life, even before Breaking Bad, that there's just bad things going on in there. And also, that was always, you know, as a kid, I was always thinking, like, yep, if things get real bad, I can live in one of those. They don't love it, but I felt like I could get away with it.
There were people, when Carrie and I moved to Bellingham, we had ours, because we didn't have anywhere to live for a while. We had all our stuff in storage in one of those places. And there were definitely people, if not living in the storage units, it was like kind of their home base of operation, and they were there like every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I would go in there once. I went in there maybe three times, once to like get stuff out over, you know what I mean? Like, I was using it kind of, I guess, in you'd say the more traditional way, like to get our stuff back. And every time I would go, I would see the same people kind of milling about. So it definitely is, you know, a thing that happens. But
yep.
So now that's such a funny, and we, actually, I really got to go now because I'm supposed to be interviewing a guy from something called Rad Times Pizza in 45 minutes.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, Andrew, that once again, I've been doing the show not fully clothed. Mm. So that's also something that I need to kind of schedule into the rest of my morning here in the hotel room. Update on that. At the gym this morning, it's a cloudy, rainy day here in Las Vegas. Guess what did not happen? The shade did not go down.
Okay, so not
so
automated.
Either
okay.
It's so automated that it knows the weather.
No.
Could happen.
I will admit, or, I'm wrong on this one.
But I was anyway. I guess that Storage Wars show is so funny to me because I actually love that show, even though I know it to be like among the fakey, like these kinds of quote unquote reality shows. It's like even more fake than House Hunters, and like not like almost nothing that supposedly happens on that show is real or is not sort of staged in a way, and yet. And even though we've already established that like storage, self-storage places kind of feel a little depressing, that I love that show so much. So it's like a real feat of alchemy that they've made this place that I think of as being melancholic into like my favorite place to see if it's on Storage Wars.
Hey, breaking news in the Italian food industry. Mario Batali has surrendered his stake in all of his restaurants a year after he was accused of sexual misconduct. That is just coming through now. It is going to be the talk of the convention, Luke, which is why I wanted to alert you to it.
You would be surprised. It might come up.
I'm not joking.
Heavy-duty Italian-American and Italian-Italian contingent, which, like, I know that's not a shock, it's pizza, but I was actually kind of surprised. Like, people are walking around in like full-on Italy colors, and like it's definitely a big part of it, and of course it would be. Like, it's silly that I didn't think about that, but I didn't until I got there. Well, I'm glad that I'm updated with the Batali information.
Okay.
Now I feel like I'm ready to go in there and have some interesting conversations, which I'm sure I'll bore the listeners with tomorrow. Give them an update on how I'm supposedly going to learn how to like acrobatically toss a pizza today. So I guess we'll see how that goes. We should wrap things up here. It sounds like we have a show title.
Yeah, let me just for the record, obviously we're going to go with quit remembering that, but I just want to throw out there that we also did say Terminal Smugness and A Real Morrissey, which I think would have been good backup show titles as well.
I'm seeing if I can just do some like, this is some real in-the-moment...
Foley like, arts? What are you doing over there?
Yeah, I'm trying to see, because you know I like to ding my bell, so to speak, at home. And I'm trying different implements here in the hotel room.
For the show titles,
like
yeah.
Bell, like, ooh, that's good. Right? Would you say that's, does that sound pretty...
It's getting there. Maybe you'd work on it, and we'll see what we got tomorrow morning. I have a song here. Do you remember a band called Swearing at Motorists? From the 90s. Anyway, they have a short little song called Flying Pizza that we can go out with. I think it's pretty sad.
Were you a fan of a band called Swearing at Motorists?
My friend,
or is that just a lifestyle choice?
My friend Uncle Paulie was a pretty big... it's one of those bands. I don't even know how to describe them. I think they might have been an Ohio band, and they maybe even a Dayton band, and I think they had a very lo-fi kind of sound. I mean, I liked what he played for me, and I think I had this one album called Number 7 Uptown, and it was kind of that emo lo-fi, I believe, kind of Guided by Voices vibe.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. This will be new to me. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for being part of TBTL. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. So until then, enjoy your Wednesday, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Look in the other way. And I was hoping that you would not see me. been a long time, but not too long. And not long enough, I'm thinking to myself. And how's your mom? And are you working the same place? And on and on. And on and on.
Power out.